you ready to take your writing to the next level? Then welcome to the Book Editor Show. Join Clark Chamberlain and Peter Turley each week as they teach you all the tips, tools, and techniques you need to move your book from manuscript to market. Visit thebookeditorshow.com for show notes, links to guests, books, and extras to make your old novel better than ever. Now, please welcome Clark Chamberlain and Peter Turley.
Welcome to the Book Editor Show. This is show number 18. We have a very special guest today, Cindy Bennett, and we'll be talking about bringing out the author's voice through your editing, so we're excited about that show. I am Clark Chamberlain. I am joined today by my ever-esteemed co-host, weighing in at 79 kilograms, the author of Oxford, the editor of England, Peter Turley. Peter, how are you doing today?
I should have come in from off-camera then, sort of.
You should have. Like, where's the rope? So,
I'm really good, Clark. Looking forward to today's show. I think we're gonna cover some good stuff. Author voice, it's one of those things that, you know, we all wonder about, and you know, how do people get it, and where does it come from? So I'm really looking forward to talking about this stuff.
Yeah, I am as well. So, because you're right, you know, when you get that feedback from someone who's like, wow, you know, I just really like how distinct your voice is, and you're like, I don't know how I did it. You know, that's hopefully, you know, that you can repeat this process again and make sure that you're bringing that out.
I didn't know my British accent was coming across in my writing, but yeah.
We hope it is, you know. So, so have you had anything fun going on this past weekend?
Just work, really, pushing for a deadline at the end of this month, get everything finished, get it shipped off to an editor. So I've just not had a minute, just not come up. But it's been good. It's nice to sort of dive in and to you know, really get down to the nitty-gritty of it and do those fiddly line edits and just making those final polishes. So, yeah, I've been a bit swamped. What about you?
A lot of the same. Right now, at the Raven International site, we're doing a big push. It's time to start promoting the anthology of Bleak New World. So I've got to get all the authors' information up on the website and get all the links put together and start doing the promotion for that. So that's really exciting. And of course, I'm going through my second edit on the middle grade fiction book that I'm writing. So, and that's what I'm doing during my mornings. And it's been good, though.
That's the fun of self-publishing, isn't it? It's not just the work doesn't end when you finish writing or editing. You've got the website to maintain and promotion and.
Yeah, I know. It's two full-time jobs, really. You know, some nights I don't get done till 3 o'clock in the morning, and get up the next morning and do it all again. So, it's a lot of fun.
I love it, really, though.
I do really enjoy it, so I haven't been happier in a long time. So, well, without further ado, I want to bring Cindy on here, introduce her today. Cindy Bennett lives a most unglamorous life in the beautiful state of Utah. She is the author of several YA books in many subgenres. She's the mom of two daughters, two sons, a son-in-law, and two daughters-in-law, not to mention the three dogs and the two grandbabies. She loves gooey cookies, dark chocolate, and cheesy popcorn. She hates the housework and cooking and has no plans to become a domestic goddess. Her favorite pastime other than writing is riding her Harley. She's also the co-owner of Creative Prose Publishing and both edits and formats books on the side. She's still wondering why, with all of this going on, she's decided to go back to school full-time. Cindy, welcome to the show. It's so good to have you on today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. So tell me, you ride a Harley. I would not expect that.
Most people wouldn't. It kind of started as maybe 10 years ago or so, my then husband bought me just one of those little scooters. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, you have to have a motorcycle license to ride that. And I'm like, really? So I went and took the classes to get my motorcycle license, and you have to ride a motorcycle to get your motorcycle license. Came home, got on the scooter, and I'm like, oh, this is cheesy. I don't want to ride this. So sold it. Bought a Honda, drove that for a couple of years, and then I went, I gotta have a Harley. So,
nice.
Became a Harley girl.
Have you made
you
the
don't expect, sorry, gooey cookies and Harleys to be in the same sentence, do you?
I know.
And have you made the trek to Sturgis yet? Is that
we did. Yeah, that was a lot of interesting, is what that is.
Yeah, that's serious street cred right there. So
yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, Utah. In one summer, I put 7,000 miles on my bike. That was pretty good.
Oh, my goodness. That is a lot of driving. So
that's a lot of driving.
A lot of fun too, though. I mean, but in Utah, you only get to ride it about what, half the year?
Not even half the year. If you can start in, you know, April, you're lucky. But by September, you're pushing it. So usually, it's more like June, July, August. So it gets too cold, snowy.
Well, we could sit here talking about bikes all day, but I know that our audience certainly wants to also hear about the great information you can give them on Author's Voice. When we first originally talked or emailing back and forth about this, this was something that really impressed me. You know, there's something that I hadn't really even thought about. You know, that oftentimes authors, through their training, you know, that they go to school and they learn to write a particular way, that a lot of times this drowns out the uniqueness of their voice, and it gets missed in their work. So how do you help an author bring that back?
Well, I think that kind of as a society, especially anybody who's gone to college, they get really, really hung up because all through school you've been taught to write in a certain way. You have to use the Chicago Manual of Style or, you know, different things like that, and you're not allowed to just kind of, you can't write gonna or kinda, you know, things like that. You can't put those in your writing, and so I find a lot of people in their writing in their books do that, and it's like, you know, it doesn't sound natural. But that's not how we speak as human beings. You know, we talk very casually, and when people are reading your book, you want them to get lost in the words. So you want them to feel like you're just telling them the story. You know, not writing it, but you're telling them the story. And so I think for a lot of authors, it's a matter of going back and just like I recently edited a book for somebody, and she's a little older. She's probably 60-ish, and her characters were in their 20s, and they talked like they were 80. I just told her, I just said, you can't. Nobody's gonna read this. Nobody's gonna buy this. Nobody's gonna believe that these 28-year-old people who, you know, the one guy, he kind of travels the world for his job, speaks this way. Mm-hmm. That's not how we speak, you know. And I told her, read it out loud. Because that's kind of the big thing. Read it out loud. And if it sounds natural and flowing, then it's okay. If it sounds stilted and odd, it's not okay. You know, that's just not how we speak as people. And so my big thing is that I don't want people to write in a way that people, that your readers aren't going to get lost in the story and in the characters. You don't ever want anything in your book that's going to pull you out of the story as a reader.
No. So. Along with this, you know, I can definitely see this in dialogue. Now that can certainly be there. But what about when just in the regular prose? How many times should someone see, a colloquial term or not term, but the colloquial way of spelling a word? Should there be more punctuation in that section versus the dialogue?
Well, I don't know. I'm a big fan of dialogue in books, and a lot of people are a big fan of monologuing, you know, which I also think is not the best way to write, because, you know, I think the best way for people to learn to love your characters is through their dialogue, which is how they really get to know them. And it also kind of depends on which point of view you're writing from. If you're, you know, writing from a character's point of view, you need to keep their languages, their narrating, the same as they're speaking. You know, I think if you're telling a third person where you're maybe not quite as close of a point of view, you know, you can get away with doing some of that stuff. You know, you learn little tricks like, you know, short sentences for like really high intensity scenes or things like that. You know, and I think you need to worry about run-on sentences too much, because as writers, I think we tend to talk a lot. We always think we have a lot to say. You know, people will ask us a simple question, and 300 words later, you've answered it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just think that when you're writing a book, it's okay to do that, because you do have a lot to say, because you're talking about this whole world and this, you know. But you still have to be really, really careful of not. And I think you can use good, you know, especially depending on what kind of book you're writing. I have a friend that writes science fiction, and so he uses a lot of big words and, you know, different words that we don't use in everyday language. But I think it's okay because of the type of book he writes. you know, most of what I deal with in editing is a lot of young adult books or romance books. And so in those, I think you have to be a little aware of your audience. They don't want a lot of details. They don't want a lot of formalities. They just want to lose themselves in the story and just be entertained for a few hours.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that sort of the author voice, do you find when you're working with a writer and you're editing for them, do you kind of end up helping them find that voice? Do you think it's something that comes over time, or can you see it straight away? You know, if you've got like a first-time writer or something, do you feel that it is apparent almost immediately, or do you think it does take a lot of like effort to discover what their voice is and sort of what makes up that voice in their writing style?
You know, first-time authors are always a little bit more difficult because they don't really have a voice, especially if they haven't written a bunch of stuff that they've done nothing with. You know, that's kind of what we have to do as authors, write a bunch of stuff that we do nothing with before we actually finish a book to be published. But I was going to say, Peter, it was kind of funny when you mentioned how your accent comes through on your books, which is awesome because Americans, we love that accent, you know. So that's good. But I think...
Yeah, we just do away with the contractions and, and you've got a really British-sounding book.
Yeah. I edited a book for a guy who, he was like raised in Ireland and then he lived in England and then now he's like in Africa and he had really interesting writing. His name was Peter too, oddly enough. I think that a lot of times authors are afraid of their voice. Like they're afraid to, and it's kind of a hard thing too because if they're writing a book from like dueling point of views, they have to have two voices. They can't have just one voice. You don't want both your characters to sound the same. You need them to sound different so that it's very clear, you know, whose point of view we're in. But I think a lot of authors are really, really afraid of their voice because they think that it doesn't follow the rules, whatever the rules are. They think they have to follow the rules. And, you know, that's why I always tell people, read it out loud to yourself, you know, to yourself or to somebody else, because you're going to understand really clearly when you're reading it out loud to somebody else if it doesn't sound quite right, if it doesn't sound like, you know, the way we speak, especially with dialogue. Like, you know, dialogue's sort of the biggest thing where you want it to be really casual because, I don't know, we just, how many people do you know in your life really that speak formally all the time? Probably not many.
I've heard that dialogue is the... it's the most natural, unnatural way of speaking. Sort of, you'll still find that the things that you would never really say, but you've got to write it in a way where it's still believably so that it would be said that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I I've been listening to a couple of audiobooks lately, and audiobooks is where it really like stands out to me. The kind of strangeness sometimes of people's writing where they don't quite let loose, I guess. You know, they don't let go and just, you know, I just think you should write. I mean, obviously you should write what you like to read, but I think just people get too hung up. They're like too afraid that people are going to think that they don't know proper English or that they don't understand proper grammar because they're not writing in a way that's proper. You know, as an English paper, it maybe wouldn't get an A. But as a book, it's probably going to do very well. You know, and I think people just, they don't understand that you just have to, and the funny thing is I have a couple of books through publishers. Most of my books are self-published, but I have two books through one publisher and another book through another publisher. And their editing just kind of drives me crazy. And I have to fight for them to leave certain things in because they've all gone to school. They all have English degrees. And so they want, you know, an English paper. And I'm like, you don't understand. I've done enough self-publishing and sold enough books that I know, I think, that readers don't want that. You know, they don't really care. Like, most readers really don't care. Unless you're writing for a super highly intelligent crowd, then maybe that's different. But, you know, your average reader, they're not going to critique casual grammar. It still needs to be correct, I guess, but not, you know, as proper as maybe you'd be taught in an English class.
Yeah, so if you sort of if you have a fairly confident grasp of sort of standard grammar and punctuation, if you just kind of write it your own way, then you mean it's the reader's probably going to like it.
Absolutely. Punctuation probably is one where you should at least have that correct.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, I mean, that doesn't really make anything sound any different if you have, you know, the punctuation there or not. And they probably might notice a little bit if that's off. But still, I just think with grammar, I just think, you know, we just get really hung up on thinking that people are going to judge us based on really what they're not. So.
Well, yeah, and you know.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and it's exactly what you're saying, you know, that you got into that habit of making sure that you're writing out the sentence long form the right way. And a lot of times people don't even think about it when they're just writing, because that's just what they're doing, is they're just putting the words down on the paper. They don't use contractions, and just everything is very formal and as it's moving along.
Right, exactly. A lot of people, when I decided to go back to school, I got divorced and kind of went, what do I want to do? I want to go back to school. Because all of my kids have college degrees and I don't, so I decided I better catch up. And a lot of people just assumed I would go back to get a degree in English or creative writing, but I just said, no, I don't want to do that because I think it will undo the way I write. Like, it'll mess up my writing, basically.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you've already done English, you know, an English degree or something like that, and then you learn to write, as long as you can still find your voice, you're fine. But I've seen a lot of authors who, you know, they write and they write really well, and then they go to school and then they don't write so well because they get hung up on those rules that they're taught. And, you know, I just think in fiction there's just there's really no such thing as rules. You know, it's just all about, to me, entertainment. You know, mm-hmm. We're writing books to entertain people. Some people might be writing books to change the world, but probably 98% of the writers who write fiction, you know, we're just here to entertain people. We just want to give them a few hours of entertainment. And so I just think we need to not worry about those rules and you know, not get hung up on those funny little things. You know, contractions are so much easier to read in a book, mm-hmm. You know, to read aren't instead of are not. Or,
yeah.
You know, I mean, and it would have instead of would have. You know, I mean, that's how we speak. We speak that way. We generally speak in contractions because, you know, as humans, we're basically pretty lazy. and so that's how we speak. We say, I'm not I am. And so, you know, I just think in fiction, we get too hung up on, and I think it's just a natural thing, too, when you're writing, just to write everything out. But then I think when you go back and read it aloud, or I have a friend that actually, she'll have her computer read it to her, you know, because you can do that, you can have your computer read it to you, and that really helps her to catch all of those places where, you know, she needs to put in contractions or, you know, change her writing up a little bit, put in some of the more lazy speech that we actually use in real life,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, gonna. I'm gonna go to the store. You know, I do have one friend that speaks very, very properly, and she would say, I am going to the store. But I'd say, I'm gonna go to the store.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, whatever works for you, I guess.
Yeah. But, you know, and voice is such an interesting thing, and we talk about voice and really talking about style and something that you can really pick out. You know, like, if I picked up just a section of a Hemingway novel, I would identify that it's a Hemingway novel, just in how it the sentence structure is and the pacing and how things are put together. You know, it's the same type of thing with music. Like, you can always identify John Williams and Danny Elfman. You know, if they're doing the score to a movie track, I know that it's them because they have a voice, you know, it comes out on that.
Yeah. I was watching Jaws the other day, which John Williams did the score for. And I'm like, you know, it's so similar to, you know, Star Wars.
Uh-huh. You
know, it's true. He does have a very, very distinct. And what's the guy that did the music for Toy Story? What's his name? I can't think of it.
I don't know.
You know, he did the You've Got a Friend in Me and
uh-huh.
all of that. He also has a very, very distinct sound in every bit of music that he does for movies. So, yeah, I think books are the same thing. I think they should sound like you and not like somebody else. You should not try to emulate somebody else, and you should not try to emulate your English teacher, you know, or whatever Chicago manual of style, or, you know, whatever. I think you should just write the way you would tell somebody the story. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were speaking out loud to them.
And that does come from writing a lot, really, doesn't it? I mean, a lot of people who are setting out to write, you know, they're picking up these like great books and like the Hemingway and, you know, who are the favorite authors of the time, and they're looking at how it's done, and, you know, the same way we will and we're learning anything. And you can find that you might sort of begin to adopt like their style a little bit just as you're learning. Yeah. And it is really just by just getting it out there, isn't it? And getting the words on the page, and eventually I guess you will see it start to sort of come to the surface, and you'll see, you know, I like action scenes, or I like, I'm really good at dialogue, or, you know, and you'll start to notice the way you tend to lay things out, and that becomes your own voice and like kind of like your signature to the work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's so true that you find your strengths. And I think one of my strengths is in dialogue. And so I tend to have a lot of dialogue in my books. And some people have really good strengths in description. You know, they can write so beautifully, it's almost like reading poetry. I'm not good at description, so I don't put a lot of description in my books. You know, I just kind of, yeah, they were in a house, it was red.
Kind of like yours.
I know, I thought it was funny that we're kind of, you have a beige background, Peter, but he and I have a red background here.
Yeah. I gotta get me one of those. Well, you've got one too.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think that, yeah, you will find your own stuff. And, you know, it is. It's just a matter of just writing and writing and writing. And people will ask me all the time, what advice do you have for writers? I'm like, just write. Even if it's nothing you're going to finish, if it's just a short story that you're not going to do anything with, it's, you know, just a story of something that happened to you today, tell about your story of going to the store and what happened while you were there and what people you observed and things like that. Because I think that's how you learn to put your prose into a format that you are comfortable with and that people are going to recognize and enjoy. And so, yeah, I do. I agree, Peter. I think it's absolutely true that you just have to just write and write and write and read a lot, of course, too. And you will find yourself adopting things that you hear, things that you read, things that you see. If you watch a certain movie, I find sometimes, like, if I watch a movie, then the next time when I sit down to write, I find myself kind of writing in the way that movie was told, or maybe the way the people in that movie spoke, and then I have to fix it because it doesn't match the rest of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think that's so natural. I think as authors, we're such observers. Like, we observe all the time, and that's what makes you a good writer, is that you observe. You know, you people watch, you listen to conversations, you hear how people interact with each other, and you watch how people interact with each other. And so I think it's natural for those things to fall into our writing. You know, but I do think that, yeah, eventually your style's going to come out. So yeah, I look at stuff I wrote maybe 15 years ago. You know, I found some old stuff that I wrote, and it's a horrible, horrible, horrible. And it's because at that time, the kind of books I were reading were like just like like a lot of romance books. And so they were all like really flowery, and, you know, and I was just like, ugh, you know. And I don't read those kind of books anymore. I write young adult, so I read young adult, and my writing style is entirely different. You would not recognize that I was the author of those books. Well, I didn't publish them, of those manuscripts at all, because they're so different than the way I write now. And I just think that's a natural human thing.
Yeah. To do that. I have to try not to to read too much, sort of, when I'm, say, like, writing or doing a first draft, because it does find its way into my writing. And just recently I've been watching, I don't know if you've ever watched it, the TV series Dexter.
Ah, yes, love Dexter. And,
well, I was never really into it, and I've been watching it, and it's amazing, and it's classic. It's kind of noir, isn't it, and very detective, mm-hmm. and there's lots of, like, hints and foreshadowing, and it's really, like, brilliantly written, and I even find myself thinking, ooh, how can I do that? And you notice how things are done, and you start doing them almost naturally.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, if you're writing a book, because sometimes, like, that's one of the ways I get over writer's block a lot of times, is I will watch movie or TV or something like that. I try not to read a lot. I try to kind of keep current on what's going on in young adult, but I don't, because of that very reason, I don't want to read a lot of young adult because I'm afraid that I'll start taking their style and I don't want to take their style. But, you know, I do. Same as you, I'll do that. And then you do find it kind of creeping in. But, you know, I think when you go back and you're, you know, going through it the second, third, tenth time, you catch those things and then you're able to, you know, fix them. So I don't think it's a bad thing for it to go into your first draft. It's just as long as you're aware enough to fix it. So
yeah, that kind of stuff's a lot of fun. I have my second book in this thriller series, you know, and it's supposed to be this big heist type con job deal, and I'm getting done with the first draft. I'm like, it's not there at all. And so I spent the entire weekend like watching Ocean's 11 stuff and like all of these. I'm like, what am I missing? You know, like what are the elements, you know, the tropes that I'm not getting right here.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's perfectly acceptable. I mean, I think it's pretty much required as an author that we do, because like I said, we're just such observers. And so, yeah, I mean, if you're stuck and you can't figure something out, or, you know, you're trying to figure out how to, you know, make this, or, you know, I'm like right now I'm writing a sequel and I am not a sequel writer. I'm a one book and done person, but this book, it was getting way too long. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to stop and I'll just, you know, write a sequel to it. That was 4 years ago. So I am not a sequel writer. But the thing is I didn't know where to go with the story. It was like, I did not have like the main conflict. And so I've been like watching things that have kind of a similar theme and reading books along a similar theme. And, you know, and then it came to me. So now that I have it, I can write it. But yeah, I mean, I just think that's how you have to observe the world. I mean, and you have to kind of stay current on what's current and what's going on, because that's what people want to read. I mean, let's face it, people want to read what's, you know, the current trend. We want to kind of write what's the current trend, because that's what's selling. And so, you know, we also want our books to be timeless, I guess, but you know, we also need them to be, that's another thing, is like when I'm editing, I really like, people will kind of date their books a little too much by putting in, say, the current hot song, or you know, things like that. And I always try really hard to encourage them not to do that, because you don't want to completely date your book. Obviously, you're going to date it a little bit by maybe technology that you put in your book, because technology is constantly changing, you know, or things like that. But, you know, I mean, 10 years from now, that song may be, you know, just the one hit wonder that's done and gone. And people are going to be like, what? What is it? You know, so I just think you have to be careful of that a little bit, too.
That's really interesting. I mean, I write fantasy, so I don't have to worry about that so much. Yeah. But that's something I'd never really thought about, but that is really interesting.
Yeah, fantasy's awesome. I wish I could write fantasy. I can't create those worlds like you guys can, but I envy fantasy and dystopian writers, because you can do whatever you want. You don't have to try to stay based in reality.
Time stamping it with a one hit wonder from like Justin Bieber.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you could. I was having a conversation with another author locally here. We're like, well, you know what you could do, because she had put all this pop culture type stuff in this book, and we were having the same conversation. It's like, well, you know, in 10 years from now, no one's gonna know. I was like, well, if you self-publish it though, and you updated it every 3 years, like you just went in and searched for those pop culture terms, and then just kicked it into a new one that's currently popular,
like, stay ahead on the stay relevant.
That's actually pretty brilliant, because you could do that and just have a new release every 3 years. That
every
just
3 years.
20 minutes to.
Clark's actually an evil genius. That's
certainly evil. But
yeah, but you know, I have to give props to Twilight, because I have a daughter who, you could not pay the girl to read a book. And when Twilight came out and it was so big, and she was probably, I don't know, 13 or so at the time, 12, 13 years old, and her sister convinced her to read that book, I can't get her to stop reading now. She reads everything and reads all the time. And so I will forever be grateful to Twilight for introducing her to reading and understanding. Because at first she would only read the Twilight books, and she'd read them over and over and over. Uh-huh. And I was like, do you understand there's this whole world of books out there? And yeah, she said now she reads everything. So
that's cool.
Sometimes it's not a good thing, because I can't get her to do anything else. But you know, but every book has its place. So. Yeah. You know, but, you know, books like Twilight, Harry Potter, books like that, I think, introduce younger people to Aragon, books like that. They introduce younger readers to the beauty of fiction. And yes. I think those kind of books, as much as adults we might not like those, they really, really do start readers that are eventually going to become our readers. You know, yes. They get them going. And so, you know, people like bash certain books, but I'm like, you know what? Hey, if it gets somebody to start reading, I'm all for it.
Yeah, you mentioned the Aragon series, and that's my son's. That's what really got him. Yeah. So I tried to get him into Harry Potter, and he had already seen the movies, so he just couldn't engage with the books very well. And but yeah, he got into the Aragon series and just ran through them within just a few weeks. So
yeah, I have a son too, and actually, I think probably the only books he's ever read are the whole Harry Potter series and the whole Aragon series. But yeah, same thing. Aragon's what got him reading, so at least he reads a little bit. So yeah, I mean, I'm all for, you know, a lot of people, even, you know, my books, they're young adult books, and so they're not maybe as detail oriented, not as complicated as an adult book. And a lot of people, adults, I have a lot of adult readers, but there are also a lot of adult readers who will bash them, you know, as being simplistic or whatever. But I'm like, you know what? You're not my target audience. My target audience is a 13 or 14 or 15-year-old, and they don't want a history lesson in a book. They don't want, you know, a lot of complication. They want to just dive in and just go for the ride. And so, you know, that's how I write. If you want me to write a really complicated novel, I could, but I don't care to.
So. Oh, and that's important. Just like you're saying, you know, and that way it helps you put it all together, find that voice, reach the people, you know, that become your core fans, and that they come back to it again and again.
So. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I can't believe we're already running out of time. Peter, did you have any final questions?
No, I think that was some great advice about sort of like writing your way into it, and what you said about your friend had the computer read it back to her. That's just genius.
It really is. Yeah, I think that's so smart because, you know, or have somebody else read it to you either way. But yeah, I bet that though, listening to it in that monotone probably actually helps you really pick stuff out.
Yeah, actually, it probably. Yeah, because I was just going to suggest that we should get Peter to voice one.
Oh, that would be awesome. You should, Peter.
Available for audiobooks if you just get it.
Well, Cindy, if some of our listeners would like to connect with you and use your editing talents, where can they find you?
I'm at cindycbennett.com. Make sure you put that C in the middle there. Cindybennett.com belongs to somebody else, so I had to use the C. So put cindycbennett.com, and then I just have a tab for editing, and it gives my prices, what I do, all of my information. So.
Perfect.
Find me there.
I'll also put a link up there when the show goes live. But I really appreciate you. Thank you so much for being with us today, Cindy.
So. Well, thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
You bet. So it has been really good. And Peter, thank you as always. It's been a pleasure.
It's good to be here.
To our listeners, thanks for joining us today. You're going to go boxing tonight, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah. I've got my shorts on, but, you know.
So to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and leave us a quick review or just a 5-star rating on there and let them know what you think. If you are an editor who would like to be a guest host or an author who would like to us to edit your work live on air, go to thebookeditorshow.com and drop us a line. For Peter Turley, I am Clark Chamberlain. Thank you so much for coming to the Book Editor Show. Remember, keep learning, keep writing, and build a better book.
Thank you for listening, and come back next week for more. Please visit thebookeditorshow.com for show notes, links to guests, books and extras, and for information on how to be a guest on the show.